Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Kyle Beard, 11 years of combination experience, a captain for Matthews Fire and EMS in North Carolina who was assigned to Station 1, also known as the Special Ops House. Kyle always wanted to be in public service and had his eyes set on becoming a state trooper. But sometimes things we want in life just don't line up and we need to adapt. And that's what Kyle did. I truly loved hearing how the experience he received when he wanted to become a volunteer resonated with him so much that it ultimately became the reason he was able to find the career side. When you listen to Kyle talk, you can clearly tell how much the fire service has done for him, but also how being a fireman isn't all he wants that defines him as an individual. He's a husband, father, and a Christian man who makes sure he encompasses all of that into his life. With that, I present Kyle Beard.
My name is Kyle Beard. I am 37 years old. I'm a captain at Matthews Fire and EMS in Matthews, North Carolina, right outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. I live down in the big city of Marshville, North Carolina, down in Union County, the home of Randy Travis, for those who don't know where Marshville is. I've been in the fire service about 11 years. I'm a truck-minded guy. Right now, I ride an engine at a special ops house where we switch to a lateral rescue, call dictating. But I'm a truck-minded guy, and hopefully in the future we can get to where we can dedicate trucks and engines with separate crews. So I'm hoping to eventually – I'd like to retire off of a truck. I would say I probably, if anybody knows me locally or even across the country, you know, some guys that I'm connected with would know that as far as emphasis goes, I have a huge emphasis with the brotherhood, making sure everybody's good, everybody's taken care of mentally, especially physically. I have a huge fitness influence. A lot of folks will ask questions and consult me on some fitness things that I have going on. I would consider myself fit, but mainly I'm just a stubborn old guy that I'm trying not to get old. And I have also have an emphasis on my faith. I'm a Christian and I'm a God-fearing man. And I feel like nothing good that happens in my life would happen without him. Whether it be me just still being here at 37 years old, you know, and not being taken, and the family that I have, the blessing in the family that I have between my wife and my three kids, and then the career of my dreams. I tell people all the time I have the best job in the world. It doesn't seem like work to me. Mm-hmm. Even on the tough days, it never seems like work to me. And I think, and then all this is, you know, brought on by my upbringing. I've had a great family my entire life. My parents were great. They still are. and I think all those good things happen because God has decided to bless me for whatever reason, whether I deserve it or not. I don't think I do, but I think all good things come from the Lord, and he has definitely had his hand in my life my whole life. So if anybody knows me, that would probably be the way I would hope that they would describe me, and just hopefully would say that I'm generally like a good supportive guy that just likes to get in the gym, likes to get after it, likes to train, likes to go to fires, like to go to pin-ins, all the good stuff. But even the small calls, you know, I treat just like the big calls. I just want to do the right thing. I want to perform. I want the guys around me to have the same mindset and just help people. I want to be someone who's looked at as a mentor or someone to look to for help, for guidance, for anything, you know, for safety. I just want to be that guy. I just want to be able to help people. And I think my dad and probably my mom too, when I was growing up, said, you need to be in public service. And I kind of shook it off at an early age. And then the older I got, it kind of fell in my lap, and I feel like I'm right where I need to be. So.
Okay. And so, can you tell the guests how you got into the fire service?
Yeah, good question. So when I was in college, I went to UNC Charlotte. Me and my wife met there, actually. Well, I grew up in Lexington, North Carolina. I'll start there. I grew up in Lexington, North Carolina, barbecue capital of the USA, and went to UNC Charlotte, and studied criminal justice. I decided that I wanted to be a state trooper. I had done an internship at the end of college and wanted to be a state trooper. They were seemed like the best of the best when it comes to law enforcement, very fit. I heard their recruit school was very tough. And I'm all about, I like to do the hard things. So I wanted to be in law enforcement. So I decided I'd be a state trooper. Tested, did pretty well. It just didn't work out. And then tested for a couple other agencies and it didn't work out. We were still in Charlotte. And my wife had applied to be a teacher back where she grew up, which is in Marshville, where we live now. And got a job like basically like that and had to start within the week. So we had to shotgun move basically from Charlotte to Marshville. And when we got down here, I had not had time to find a job. So I was working construction, looking for a job at the time. And there were some downtime because it was like in a time of the year where, it was, I think it was like either really hot or really cold. I can't remember. But I would get home early and I would have some downtime. And my father-in-law at the time, he was home and he was sick with cancer, God rest his soul. And he had grew up in Marshall. And I was like, Mike, like I'm kind of bored. I need to get to know the area. I need to get to know the people. And I it just I don't know, a thought hit me. I was like, is there like a local like volunteer fire department around here that I could go talk to? And he was like, yeah, there's one right down the road. And so I went there and talked to them and kind of spoke to somebody, and then he said, and I was like, well, the guy I spoke to, I didn't really get a good connection with. And he's like, well, there's one, in the other direction about the same distance. And so I had went and talked to them, and it was Allen's Crossroads Fire Department in Wingate, North Carolina. And I walked up, and Scott Kimmery, he's a mentor of mine, he's a retired Charlotte fireman. Was sitting there, and he was one of the paid guys. And I knocked on the door, and he answered the door. Big, lurch, son of a gun, just built tall, like Frankenstein. And I was like, "Whoa! I mean, this guy looks like a fireman, And I said, "Hey, I'm new here. I'm trying to get to know the area, and I figured this is the best way to do it. Can I get an application to the fire department?" And he said, "Man, you look like a fireman. Let's get you an application." And it was just so enthusiastic. And like that was like out the gate. That was the first, honestly, the first interaction I'd had in the fire service. And it just snagged me, man. The way he treated that, like, yeah, let's get you an application. We want you type deal. And to this day, he's still a good friend of mine. He was a mentor. He actually taught some of my fire classes soon after that. And so I just jumped right in. And so I showed up to a meeting night. You know how volunteer fire meeting nights go. It's like twice a month, on a Monday. And I had no clue. I had no clue about anything with the fire service. Didn't know how anything went. And they were talking to me and they were like, basically like, hey, if you want to run calls, you have to have certifications. So we need you to go to certification class. So they were like, hey, the certification class starts like next month. I was like, okay, cool. Just let me know when I need to be there. So I showed up, not knowing that this was before all the standards were going to change, and it was the push to get everybody done within a year. So not knowing that I was about to get into a year's worth of my fire certification classes, hadn't told my wife. I can't remember if we were pregnant for the first time at that time, or soon after that we found out. So I had gotten a job at a local nursery. That does plants. So I was working at the nursery and going to fire classes at night. And so I did that for a year, all straight through, went from uncertified to my fire one and two within a year. In that same time, my daughter was born, our first child. So it was like a jam-packed year. And then like her first Christmas morning at like 4 a.m., my first structure fire came out. And I'll never forget my wife asking me, I got up at like 4 o'clock and I was like, I'm getting my stuff on, getting ready to go to the firehouse. She's like, are you going to go to that? I was like, yeah. And she's like, this is, you know, Surrey's first Christmas. And I was like, I promise I'll be back in time. And so I POV'd it to the fire, met the fire truck there. I was getting my gear on as they pulled up, or getting my pack on and stuff as they pulled up, went in, punched it in the teeth. And I think from that point, actually going like into that, you know, just straight in Christmas Day, it was just so much involved. I was hooked, man. I was hooked. And I had good guys that whole year that took classes with me, guys that were around here locally that just lifted me up. They were a huge support for me. And to this day, I tell everybody I owe that place a lot. And then locally, I work for them part-time, Allen's Crossroads. And then I work locally for Lane's Creek. And both of those departments were a huge factor in me wanting to get more involved in it. And I owe those guys a ton, both departments. I was still working at the nursery, running as many calls as I could, volunteer, just trying to be good, trying to, you know, get better and learn more. And had a buddy that was with Lane's Creek, that went to church with me. He had went to Wing It and was involved in Wing It Fire Department and somehow got hooked up with Matthews. And so we were at a cookout or something, and then he started talking about working part-time nights at Matthews. And he was like, you know, I work a few shifts a month, like 10 shifts a month, and it pays for my mortgage. I was like, okay, all right. And my wife was like, yeah, you should do that. And I was like, are you sure? Because, like, you know, I was working and taking these fire classes at the same time. I was gone a lot, and it was just, you know, stressful. I was like, are you sure? And I don't think she remembers it, but she was like, yeah, you should do it. I was like, okay. So I'll apply. And so this was before they were 24 hours a day. So they had career staffing during the day. And at the time, they had volunteer, stipend, part-time, whatever you want to call it, at night. And so I applied to be part-time and had my certifications, got hired. And they were like, you know, at this time, you can't get a stipend or anything until you do your check off. So I was like, listen, I've got a wife and a little baby at home. Like, I'm going to be here, but I'm going to get paid to be here. So let's blast through the check off. And so I was hustling pretty good when I got up there and blasted through my check off. I don't, they might not have been impressed, but they acted like they were impressed. Like, oh man, it's check off. You know, he got it done really quick. And, you know, he's got certifications. He's really involved. He's, you know, halfway fit probably at the time. And and that was probably 28, because I got involved late in fire service. Probably 25, 26 is when I got involved, volunteer. And so the opportunity came where they were going to go 24-hour career. They were going to change a ton. We had a new chief at the time, who's our current chief, who had just made huge steps in the right direction to get that department progress to where it needed to be. And so that was the push to hire a bunch of people full time so they could go career, fully career, 24 hours, three shifts. And I think I had made a pretty good name for myself so far. I'd like to think so. And some guys were like, hey, you need to apply for the full time spot. So I was like, okay. And so I had started like a men's group at our church, working out in the mornings. We were getting up at like 4 in the morning, working out at our church, just doing body weight stuff or minimal equipment stuff. So I had started kind of getting pretty heavy, and I'd always worked out my whole life, but not as dedicated as I was. But whenever I realized, like, listen, like, you're about to be a fireman career, possibly, you need to be like tip top shape. And so I hoofed it in the gym like crazy. Just started training like crazy, and tried to, you know, still working part time, tried to get home my skills. I really wanted to just crush the interview and the test, the qualifier for Matthews, and tested. And I think I did really well as a group of us. some of my best friends got hired with me. Chris Clark, I know you spoke with him. He's one of my best friends in the world and also a mentor. We got hired. He had been Salisbury in the military and came back from the military, and Matthews was hiring, so he applied. So he and I were in the same hiring class. Harry McLaughlin, he was in that class. He's a great friend of mine, JT Lipka. JT Lipka and I came into classes together in the fire service, and he applied. So it was cool to see like some familiar faces and stuff applying. My driver now, Jonathan Jones, he got hired with me. So it was just a really great class of people that all came together and got hired. And that was when Matthews was changing a lot. So there was such a push to get us and everybody meshed together. And so got hired, went to shift, and I guess you would say the rest is history, you know. And so then when I got hired full-time, I was able to, on my off days, kind of give back whenever I could to the part-time departments that really set me up for success there. So Allen's Crossroads and Lanes Creek, both of those chiefs really had done so much for me. And I had to ask them, I was like, hey, do you need help part-time? They were like, yeah, come on. So started doing that. And now I'm a captain. I'm a duty officer at Allen's Crossroads. And Lanes Creek is the district that I live in. So I do as much as I can there. And, I've always had great mentors, but also just like outside of the fire service aspect of it, just great people that I've met in the fire service that have like lifted me up and supported me and really set me up for success, I think. And so, great crews throughout my career at Matthews. And then I believe it was last October, I assessed and then got promoted to captain. And since then, as soon as they promoted folks, they had to kind of split people up and split the crews up, you know, with newly promoted officers. And I got blessed to get an absolute great group of guys out the gate, getting promoted, just a jam up group, crew of guys. I got my driver, who's a seasoned guy, very smart. Him and I are great friends. And then two rookies, but just hustlers, just absolute dogs. Love to learn, love to train, love to work out. And it was like, did somebody bless me with these two guys? Like, I mean, they're, you know, guys after my own heart type deal. And shout out to those guys at 12A here at Matthews. They make the daily for me as a newly promoted guy so easy. I mean, just super easy. And I've never regretted going to work, but as a captain, and I didn't think so for a long time, but I'm having a blast. Probably the most fun I've had in the fire service as a captain. And it's just, you know, it's been a great trip, great ride since I've been in the fire service. I can't say a bad thing about it.
Okay. Love it. You can definitely hear it. There's no faking it. You can definitely hear.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
How you talk.
I wear it on my sleeve, man. I can't fake a thing.
Okay. For those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about Matthews? And it doesn't have to be exact, but your number of stations, calls, things like that.
Yeah. Okay. For a long time, it was two stations. They opened a third station last year, at the end of last year. We are a combination department, meaning that we have 24-hour career staffing, but we also supplement with part-time. We have the station one, which is the station I work at. We ride an engine primarily, but we're a special ops house, so dictating the call, whether it's, you know, a wreck or a technical rescue event, we jump to the rescue. If it's a fire that needs an aerial or something like that, we jump to the ladder. And then station two is in the middle of town. They have an engine and a squad. A lot of our part-time staffing helps us supplement that squad medical response. And then station three is the new station. They run an engine and a brush truck out of there. And our battalion runs out of station two. We have, during the week, we have the chief and the deputy chief and training captain on shift there at Station One at headquarters. Excuse me. Before we opened Station Three, we were 4,000 plus calls a year. But essentially, Idyllwild Fire Department closed. It was between us and Mint Hill Fire Department. Idyllwild Department closed, and that was what Station Three is going to basically inherit theirs. And I'm pretty sure Idyllwild was pretty busy, about 2,500 calls a year. So I would guess, you know, at the end of the first year with Station Three, the department as a whole will probably be somewhere between 5,500, 6,000 calls for three stations. Small town, about 18 square miles, right outside of Charlotte, in between Charlotte and Union County, Stallings area and Hemby Bridge in Union County. Major highways intersecting 485, 51, 74, just a cluster of highways. It's an old town. It's a railroad town. We got a railroad that goes right through the middle of Station One's district downtown. We call it Stump Town because essentially they cut down a bunch of trees to bring the railroad in. So that's why they call it Stump Town. We go mutual aid with Union County. We go mutual aid with Mint Hill, which is another municipal department in Mecklenburg County that neighbors us. And then we go mutual aid with Charlotte whenever they dispatch us. So we stay pretty busy. There's been calls. There's been days, you know, where, you know, it's low, but then there's been calls. I think the most I've run in a day was like 35. Like that's out the door runs, dispatched to like 40 some that day. Okay. So, you know, normally our station, we could run 5, we could run 12, we could run 15, you know, it's just, you know, it's just like any day in the fire service, it's hit or miss, but it's a busy department, very progressive department as far as training. Our chiefs have given us amazing opportunities to develop professionally, whether you're a company officer, whether you're a rookie fireman, a driver, a senior guy, they allow you to go to classes. They allow you to better yourself. I can't say enough about the cool, amazing, once in a lifetime opportunities I've had since I've been at Matthews. You know, people talk about the big one I've done, which is amazing. I took Sprat 1 and Sprat 2, which is the technical rescue rope class, and I got to rappel off of the scoreboard at Panther Stadium. I mean, who gets to do that stuff? You know, any fire classes, rescue classes, swift water, they'll send us a very progressive group of chiefs and our training captain. They really want us to be good, but they really want us to, you know, put it in our hands. Like, hey, if you want to go to this, let us know. And so, and I can't think of any that I've asked for that they've ever said no to, as far as trying to be better. And I appreciate that a ton. So I've had a great opportunity since I've been at Matthews. It's a great place to be. If God willing, I'll retire there.
Okay. What's the minimum staffing like on your apparatuses?
Okay, so my crew at Station One is a group of 4, but I believe we're about to go to 5. And then the crew at Station Two is 4, and then the crew at Station Three is 4, with the battalion chief on shift, and then obviously the admin type staff during the week. Our minimum is you know, just like anybody else, we go down to 3 and no less than that. And then again, it helps with the supplemental part-time staffing that helps us beef up too. Whenever we have whenever at minimum staffing.
Okay. And yeah. as far as if a first due residential structure fire comes out, what's your first alarm assignment consist of?
It's going to be, in town, it's all 3 trucks.
Okay.
Chief, very likely getting an aerial, depending on where it is on the side of town, either an aerial from Mint Hill, or we very possibly could get an aerial and an engine and a chief from Charlotte. And then commercial, obviously, we get a little bit more from Charlotte and other departments. But especially in town, you definitely out the gate from us, you're getting all 3 engines and the chief, and then 1 or 2 trucks from another department.
Okay.
on a working structure, on a dispatch structure fire.
Okay. And I'm assuming everybody at Matthews is BLS, right? There's no ALS transport, nothing like
No,
that.
sir. No, yeah, we're BLS, thank God.
Okay. All right. Yeah, all right. So you answered all the questions I had. I usually like to ask the guests like how their department works. That way other people get a feel, and that way they can be like, oh, okay, either they're just like us, or they have a little bit more, or they're doing
Right.
more with less. So okay. So I'm gonna roll into my next question for you. So and you've hit it hard, but I want people to understand why this is so important. You know, fire service is great. Like most firefighters who love this job feel like when they go to work, they're not really going to work. It's like a, I don't want to say a hobby, but it's work, but it's not work. But with that being said, how important is physical fitness in correlation to being a firefighter?
If you ask me, it's the primary and main requirement. And you know, as a kid, you look at the way people view firemen. You think about all the calendar guys and all, like, they're huge and strong. And we should be that way, if you're asking me, because we have a dangerous job. We have a difficult job. I mean, yes, part of our job is easy. If you go to a medical call, you're not going to do a whole lot of lifting, and it doesn't really require you to be crazy fit, but you're going to have to lift somebody. You may have to carry them down four flights of stairs on a medical call. So even on the lowest side of the spectrum, you have to have a certain level of fitness. And then on the top side of the spectrum, you're asked to perform at your heart rate, you know, a crazy heart rate for 5 to 10 to 30 minutes. And then if something goes bad, you may have to do essentially a compound power lift and save somebody who's essentially your size or bigger, and your concern is not fitness out the gate. That is the dangerous mentality, if you're asking me. And that's why, like, you know, I told you whenever I was preparing for to be a career fireman, I focused a little bit on my skills, but I focused mainly on just hammering the gym. I wanted to be the fittest person in that class, the fittest person. I wanted them to be like, this dude's a monster. And it wasn't, you know, strictly powerlifting. It wasn't strictly running. It wasn't strictly, you know, CrossFit type HIIT exercise workouts. It was like all encompass. And that's the struggle. Some guys think, like, you know, I can just power lift, but the job is not all lifting. And some folks think I can just run. Well, the job is not all cardio. And so you have to be essentially a jack of all trades when it comes to the fitness side of things, in my opinion.
Right.
And in my experience, you have to be the jack of all trades. There has been times where we've had to lift a 400-pound patient. There's been times where you've had to work at an exceeded heart rate for, you know, 30, 35 minutes. And in the side of the, you know, lifting side, running probably wouldn't help me one bit. And in the side of, you know, working at a high heart rate, power lifting all the time probably wouldn't have helped me. I would have been done, cooked in a couple minutes. And there's been times where I've kind of favored one or the other. You know, if I wanted to pick up weight, of course I went to the lifting. If I wanted to slim down, I went to the running and the HIIT side of things. But the older I get, how old are you, Danny?
I'm 40.
40? Okay. So you're understanding the same thing. I'm 37 years old. You know, we're at the age where it's like pertinent for us to be generally healthy and not just be strong, or big. Muscular type thing. You know, there it has to be an all encompass type mentality when it comes to fitness. And so I try to incorporate that, like, in about everything I do. You know, people will think I'm crazy. Even a guy, I posted a workout last week when I was at the beach and I had a kettlebell, and someone was like, of course you would carry a kettlebell to the beach. And I'm like, well, there's no, what else? I can't buy, I'm not going to go to the beach and pick something up. You know, I carry it with me, you know, bands or a vest. It stays in my truck. So there's no excuse, in my opinion, on my part, not to do something. And I have personal rules for myself too, that, if I'm in a rut and I don't, have my routine, or I'm out of my routine or something, I don't know what to do. If I think for 10 minutes on what I'm going to work out for, I default to 100 burpees. You don't need, you don't, you could be stark naked and get a good workout in. You don't have to have any weight. Your body weight is good enough. And that's another thing. People are like, what kind of equipment do I need? And I'm like, just start with your body weight. Start with the bread and butter, push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, burpees, body weight squats, planks, all that stuff is a great foundational thing to start with. And so that's my rule. If I think for 10 minutes and I can't figure something out that I'm going to do, I start with 100 burpees. And by the time I'm done with that 100 burpees, if I ain't figured it out, it's 100 more burpees. So either I'm hustling to figure out what I'm going to do, or 200 burpees or 300 burpees is going to be the workout for the day. I'm going to be absolutely smoked for the better. And so I've set rules for myself like that. And there probably hasn't been, I talk about the kettlebell, there probably hasn't been a week of my life since I've touched a kettlebell, in probably almost 10 years, that I haven't touched a kettlebell. Every week, multiple times a week, I think is like just a great piece of equipment. And so there's like pillars of the fitness side of thing for me, that all relate to the fire service. I can get a great cardio workout or I can get a great lift, but it's all going to contribute to my performance, on the fire side of things. And so it is so foundational and so out front before anything else in the fire service in my mind. Like, you can't, you your skills, you could be smart and you could have great skills, but if you can't work for an extended period of time, then in my opinion, you're a liability on the truck. And some
No.
people don't like to hear that. Like, oh, I've seen the fittest guys not be able to work, or I've seen, and it's like, are they fit? Are they training right? Are they just big? Or you've seen this guy run 1,000 times, but he's gassed after having to lift somebody. So is he considered fit, or is he just able to run a long time? Or is this guy able just to lift a lot of weight? Is that considered fit, or is that just considered strong? So I think fit, the word itself, encompasses so much for firefighters, on the performance side of things. You got to be a jack of all trades when it comes to the fitness side of things, if you're a fireman.
No, it's a fact. It's a fact. And I always like letting others reiterate it. I don't want people to think for me to be a broken record when I talk about it, but it's a must, and you knocked it out the park. So, my next question to you, in your opinion, what does the term aggressiveness mean?
Aggressiveness. And that's a great question, because as a company officer, your thinking changes a little bit, because as a backstep guy, aggression means I'm off the truck quick. Some people like, don't run on the fire scene. Everything is dictation. Everything dictates something different, a different response. Slow is smooth, smooth is fast, or sometimes fast is fast, off the truck. But I think aggression as a backstep guy is getting out there and being prepared and getting after it when the time calls. Whether it's a ripper and you're the first due, you're off the truck, you're through the door, you're hitting it in the teeth, or it could be, as far as the pin in, you're getting there, getting patient care in place, extricating, being super smooth with your movements and not being reckless. And then as a driver, some folks don't talk about that, as being an aggressive driver and not a reckless driver. I'm talking about an aggressive driver. There's a huge difference. Some folks think aggression, they put that together with the word reckless. I don't agree with that. My driver is so safe, but there's been times where, it's been raining, casting dogs, terrible traffic in response to a structure fire, and I'm over there like, looking at all the bad things that can happen, and I'm looking at him, he's cool as a cucumber. but such an aggressive, like so aggressive in his response to things, whether it's being, getting out where you away from everything so something doesn't happen. That's aggressive to me. You're ahead of the game, or picking up speed when you need to, approaching an intersection like you're supposed to. And then when it comes down to you're in the neighborhood, getting after it, and then as a company officer, all that thinking changes. Because for me, I love aggressiveness, but I also like being prepared. And so a guy that's, off the truck and way ahead of me, to me, might be a little bit dangerous. If he's way ahead of me and I can't keep up with him, he might do something and I'm not there to help him out or something like that. So maybe aggression as a company officer would be as a crew aggression, and not just like me by myself, because it's not my job as a company officer to leave my guys. It's my job to guide them. I can be, close to them, but as a company officer, all that changes in my head to, we are aggressive. It's not I'm aggressive, and for everybody. And that's the beautiful thing about the fire service is everybody has a separate role, and you can be aggressive in those roles, and you look so clean coming off the truck. Oh man, that driver did a great job getting there. He's off the truck doing what he's supposed to, getting everything hooked up, getting everything charged. It may be the driver pulling the line for you while the rest other guys are to the door, stuff like that. And yeah, I think if you're prepared as a crew, and you're smooth, it can look aggressive. Like, man, this guy's came off the truck ready to go. But if you're prepared, it's just normal operations, right? So I think aggressiveness goes into knowing what you need to do right now and being prepared to do it and acting. If you're asking me to summarize it, I think that's the way I would describe it. Knowing what to be, being prepared, knowing what to do, and acting accordingly.
Okay. So at what point in your career, so it's a two-part question.
Okay.
At what point in your career did you decide to start moving up the ranks to company officer, and why?
Okay. That's a good question. So I can't remember. It might have been during COVID. Is it 2020, 2021? Not many folks, everybody in North Carolina know about it, but I don't know about as far as the country goes. But North Carolina Breathing Equipment School, in Gastonia at Gaston College. An amazing, amazing program. They presented it to the department, and I had always wanted to go. I had heard about breathing school, and they presented it to the department, and I think I was so eager to go. I think I sent the training cap my email, and it said, "I will fist fight anybody in this department for a spot to go to breathing school." I was just so eager to go. I wanted this spot. And so at the time, I think Matthews was in a promotional phase where everybody in the area kind of knew that, like, we had some spots and people were trying to promote. And at that time, I was driving and still staying fit, doing my thing. But I think I hadn't been pushed operationally or just mentally in a while. I think when I got hired, I got pushed a little bit, and then you got into on the shift and kind of got in the mode. And this was an aggressive crew. I think Chris Clark and I were on a crew together at the time. So we were an aggressive crew, having a great time. But I was like, I haven't worked on myself outside of just being at the firehouse in a while. I haven't been pushed. So I went to breathing school, and as far as fitness goes, I was handling it. But they put you in great situations, terrible situations that challenges your thinking, that challenges the way you're going to act. They pattern a lot of the drills after LODDs, which is a heavy thing to do. But what a great approach to help people and kind of test their thinking in that situation. And so you do certain drills that And I think a lot of them, or almost all of them, are from North Carolina LODDs. There was the death with the two guys in Salisbury a while back. And then there wasn't a death, but there was a very extensive call that they called the Paul Parks drill, where a guy was essentially had the second floor of a garage fall down on him, and they had to use airbags to lift him. And then the Bowen drill from Captain Bowen in Nashville. And so there's all sorts of drills that week, but those are like closer to the end of the week. And throughout the week, you get split up in squads. And I ended up being kind of the squad leader. It pushed me because I wasn't a company officer. And so I kind of had to act as such, even though we weren't really assigned to any roles. You
Right.
have somebody that kind of just falls into it. And so I fell into it. And throughout those drills, you're challenged so much. And I think they did the Bowen drill and the Paul Parks drill on the same day. And I was driving back and forth from Matthews each day. And mentally, Jay Betancourt was the one who was essentially trying to rescue Captain Bowen in the event, and Jay was helping with breathing school that day, and so was Paul Parks, who was the one that was trapped and was had to be rescued. So both of them spoke after those drills, and going through those drills and being challenged, and man, if this was a real situation, this would have been like a really tough thing for me to do or to deal with, or I would have been in big trouble if I would have, been in this actual situation. And then to have them speak. Man, I got super in my head and emotional on that last, I think it's Monday to Friday, and that was a Thursday, and I just was like, man, that was such a heavy way to do these drills, and it just affected me like crazy and challenged me. Like, I immediately realized, like, man, this was such a good thing to do because I was challenged. And then in the final drill, again, put myself in situations that were pretty dicey. They came out well, but you start thinking like, man, that got kind of interesting in there. If this was a real situation, this would have been pretty crappy. And it challenged me, like I said, the way I wanted to. And I had a guy tell me, we're talking to your team, talking to your squads and everything at the end of the week, and you feel so accomplished, passing breathing school and talking to them. And I think it was one of the guys was like, hey man, I really appreciate you. And I was like, hey, I appreciate your hard work and everything. And they were like, man, if you were a company officer, I would ride your truck. And that was such a great compliment to someone who had not even considered being a company officer at the time. And I was like, I really appreciate that, man. And I was like, okay, maybe I can do this, And I wasn't in the mindset to promote, but I was like, okay, maybe this was what I needed to challenge my thinking and my abilities. Maybe I should start heading that direction. So I hadn't taken any of the officer track or instructor track or anything like that. So started working towards that the next couple of years. Matthews started doing their officer development program. So I did that. And it just so happened that my captain at the time, Ryan Haynes, he's now my battalion chief. Great guy, mentor of mine. I mean, he's actually younger than me, just a super accomplished fireman. He was my captain and blew his knee out. So I was driving for him, and there was a couple of us that was driving for him because I had come from another crew and back to station one. And he blew his knee out bad and was out for like a long time. So, I rode the seat for a long time, and it, again, challenged my thinking, challenged the way I approached things, challenged my abilities, and was a great time for me to learn on the job. And I had learned from him, working with him, but like to actually like apply those things on the job, actually riding the seat, getting reps every day, on calls, in trainings, leading all that stuff. And it led right up to the point where there was another promotional season at Matthews. He was trying to go to battalion chief, and I was trying to go to the captain spot. And it's like the time he came back, he was back for like a month and promoted to battalion chief. And then they did the Coney Officer Assessment, and I got promoted. And it was kind of wild that very, very rarely happens. I promoted out of the crew to the crew. I stayed exactly on the crew that I was at and the spot that I had been riding for so long, riding up for now Chief Haynes. I stayed right where I was, and that was like a huge blessing too, and a huge reward to like, hey man, I'm right where I was before. So what a great opportunity. And that was kind of the way that happened.
And so, how long did you wait before you went up to company officer? Like, how long were you a firefighter for, but before
Okay.
then moving up?
Let's see. So I got hired in career in October of 18, and then October of 24, I promoted. So I guess that's 6 years. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 6 years.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And I had kind of I rewinding, I had kind of been not forced, but I had kind of been thrust into driving
Right.
earlier than I wanted.
Okay.
The captain that I had actually came off the job and ended up, committing suicide. So at the early stages of my career, I was asked to step up and drive. So I drove for quite a few years early on. And I was thankful that I had the volunteer experience and the volunteer experience on calls before I got hired career, because I didn't get a lot, like as long as I wanted to on the back step. But I've always been one to believe like, hey, things happen the way they're supposed to. God has a purpose in all this. And I had great officers leading up to that the whole time I was driving. So I think, being given that responsibility early on definitely helped me mature in the fire service to the point where I could promote earlier on in my career.
Okay.
Yeah.
And with that, what does leadership look like to you now that you're a company officer? Because you've mentioned you've had, and whether they know it or not, you've had mentors in your life that have shown you either things you want to do and things you don't want to do. But now that you're a company officer, what does leadership look like to you?
Leadership means to me, obviously, capable. Being capable to do the job that you're asking people, I think, is a huge huge way to be an example. They say lead by example. So if I'm going to ask somebody to do something, I need to know how to do it, and I need to be able to do that, know how to do it. So, whether it's masking up quickly. If I'm going to ask my guys to be masked up in a certain amount of time, then I better have a standard for myself and be able to mask up in the same amount of time.
Preach.
If I'm going to be able, if I'm going to ask them to stretch a line, throw a ladder, force a door, if I can't do those things, then my credibility drops. So I think capability is a huge thing that the people don't really talk about a lot. They think like, oh, this he's the officer, he doesn't have to do that anymore. No. Because it very well could be me. Someone could get to the door and pass out or forget a piece of equipment, and I'm not going to wait for them to come back. I'm going to force the door ahead of them, right? So I have to be capable to do those things. I think leadership also means knowing when you are not the most knowledgeable one and delegating who is knowledgeable. Like I've told you earlier, my driver is an extremely intelligent person. And I told him out the gate, told our whole crew out the gate whenever we all went to shift together, that just because I'm the newly promoted captain or I'm the officer, that doesn't mean I have the answers on everything. And I told our guys, hey, we're going to rely heavily on our driver, his experience, his knowledge. And truthfully, if you knew him, you'd ask him. Most of the time, when I get on something and it's kind of questionable, I'll say, Jonesy, what do you think? It's like a knee-jerk reaction for me. And I love that my body or my mind goes there, is to ask somebody else's opinion. So it's not just my ego that's leading everything. And that has helped out a ton because this experience is invaluable. And I think the guys realize that too. And I think they probably, and I would hope in their eyes that I gain a little bit of respect not leading with my ego and getting their opinions on things. So I think leadership is also knowing, reading the room and knowing when you need to let somebody else give some knowledge. And I think leadership is also setting expectations and standards and holding yourself to them while holding everybody else to them. You know, we talked about fitness. That's the first standard for me. I'm gonna hold my guys to a fitness standard, but I've got to hold myself to it first. And then if they see me do something, then they're like, oh man, this captain, you know, he can do this, or he's has no problem with this. I should probably step my game up. And I had great examples. Both of my parents are, you know, in their early 60s and amazingly fit, crazy fit, both of them, really. My dad was in the military for 35 years. He's retired one-star general. And I think when he retired, I think he was in like the top five for his group on his PT score when he retired after 35 years as a one-star general. And so that to me always stands out in my brain. Like, you know, I think he was in his 50s. Like in his 50s, he held the standard his whole career. And what a testament for those guys to look in a battalion, to look at their general who's killing this PT test and he's about to retire.
Right.
And so I think setting that standard and maintaining that standard is huge. But also I spoke about expectations. I can't, you know, come down on somebody if I haven't set the expectation beforehand, you know. Because they say, like, well, I didn't know that. Okay. If I didn't set the expectation, then that's on me. And there's some books that I've read that kind of allude to that. Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink is a huge, huge one. I read that and it just kind of changed my approach and my thinking to a lot of things when it comes to like fault or who's at fault for things. And if you're set in a leadership position, ultimately, whatever happens is your fault. So if you've let some guy, you know, drag his rear in the gym for a long time and something bad happens or he's injured, then it's my fault. I should have said something a long time ago. If we get to a fire scene and this guy can't perform operationally and I have coddled him or like, hey man, you'll get it eventually and da 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 da, then it's my fault. It's my fault because I should have said something or done something a long time ago. So setting those expectations up front is like huge in my opinion. And that's like, you know, I sat down, got some help from some guys and from my dad really. And I was like, hey, I'm newly promoted. We're about to go to shift. I find out who's on my crew. And I wrote down like, you know, 10 or so things that like, hey, these are the non-negotiables for our crew. Like, you won't ever have to get it twisted because I'm giving you this on paper that this is the way we're going to operate. And I didn't get into any details, but like they knew from the start where my head was at and the things that they were never going to have to like, hey Cap, are we going to do this? Like, well, you should know the answer to that. And I don't ever have to say that. And like I said, I've got great guys. So out the gate, they were like, check. Cool, you know, they were about it, all three of them. And so I was blessed in that aspect. I haven't had to drag anybody along at all. They've been right beside me. And then sometimes your expectation bypasses you. You know, you got guys that start working on masking up and then they're masked up and they're waiting on you. You're like, okay, all right, it's working. Or all right, maybe I should do a couple extra reps or something, or you know, and those are the things you want to happen. Like as a company officer, as a leader, if your guys are successful, some people get mad about that things. Like you should feel rewarded at seeing your guys succeed. And so when I see stuff like that, I'm like, you know, good for you. I love to see it. I think If you're offended by it, then your ego deserve to be checked.
Ego, I think is it's up
That's
it.
a heavy word, and especially it's as a company officer, that's something that you have to put it aside. If you have an ego, you're gonna get it. You're gonna get your ego checked, and you're gonna get your feelings hurt. And sometimes that's okay. Sometimes it's good to get your feelings hurt because it can makes you change your approach, makes you change your thinking. But if you're a company officer out the gate, you should put that thing aside. In my opinion. In my opinion. Again, I'm not perfect, and the way I do things may be completely different by some of the listeners or some of the guys in the fire service. But in my opinion, that an ego can get you in trouble.
Fast, for sure.
Yeah.
Ego and the fact that, and you mentioned it, you just hit it. Just because you don't do it this way doesn't mean it's the wrong way. For me, as long as it gets done and it's not dangerous, it like the throwing a ladder. There are going to be people with different body mechanics, different sizes. They're going to throw a ladder
Yes.
differently than you would. Doesn't make it wrong. As long as they get it done, they get it done.
Yeah, I keep a file in my phone, and it has everything to do with Matthews, the fire service, being a company officer. And I heard a quote, and I keep it at the very top of that list, right under the name of the note. I keep a quote, and it says, "Don't let perfect be the enemy of good." When I heard that quote, I said, "What did you say?" The guy said it, and he said, "Don't let perfect be the enemy of good." And I was like, "I love that." Meaning, is it ever going to be perfect? No. Is it going to be good a lot? Yeah. So why harp on the things that are not perfect if they're getting the job done? Now, should you strive to be perfect? 100%. 100%. It's your job to train constantly until you get it wrong, or until you can't get it wrong. But don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Like you say, if I told my guys, I don't care if you mask up standing on your head, whether you have gloves on or not, if you're masked up under this time, I don't care how it goes. I mask up with my gloves on because that's the way I've trained to do so, and my standard is this. And I want your standard to be the same thing. I don't care. Like I said, if you're standing on your head and you can do jumping jacks while you do it, as long as you do it under this amount of time, it don't have to be perfect, as long as it's good.
Facts.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things I just don't understand. I guess it goes with that adage, firemen dislike two things, change and the way things are, or the way things were, however you want to say
Yeah.
it. But
Word.
it's,
Yeah. Yeah. The
we
way we've always done things.
we've always done it. Well, this is the way we've
Yeah.
always done it. Okay, that's
Yeah.
great, but there's different ways that you can do it now.
Yeah. And as a company officer, as a supervisor, people hate the word micromanage. They like, that's like, I don't ever want to be a micromanage. So, I've caught myself sometimes like, oh, he didn't do that the way I did, but he still got it done. And so if I tell him like, you should do it this way, this is the way I do it, I'm micromanaging if I say that. So I have to be careful. Now, if they're being dangerous or reckless or not doing it at a certain standard, there's one thing. But if they're getting it done, then let it be good. I don't need to micromanage. So, you always have to catch yourself in those situations. You don't want to be that guy.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I got you 100%, 100%. How do you find the balance between wanting to be perfect when it comes to the fire service, meaning like your physical fitness, training, you want your guys to be involved, engaged, but how do you find that balance between that, family and faith?
So I'm gonna tell you like a real quick like
Sure.
analogy, and I've heard it recently, and it totally encompasses the way that we should approach things, in my opinion. This farmer, he's looking for some help around his farm. So he's interviewing this farmhand, and he says, tell me about your qualifications. And the farmhand says, I can sleep through a storm. And the farmer's like, I didn't ask where you sleep. I asked for your qualifications. Well, the farmer likes the guy anyway, so he hires him. A couple months go by, and big storm comes out in the valley. So the farmer goes looking for his farmhand. What's he doing? He's sleeping. So he's like, man, this guy, I cannot believe this. So him and his wife, farmer and his wife, they go out, start trying to prepare everything. What do they find? The shutters on the farmhouse have been fastened down. There's tarps over all the dry goods. The tractor's under the cover where it's supposed to be. All the animals have plenty of food and water and provisions. All the provisions have been taken care of. And it hits the farmer what his farmhand was talking about. He can sleep through a storm. And basically, it said, how you prepare in times of peace predicts your behavior in times of war. And I love that, man. It can be applied to so many things. And you talk about finding balance. If I'm preparing like I'm supposed to, you mentioned faith. If I'm in my Bible like I'm supposed to, if my prayer life is like it's supposed to, if I'm relying on God like I'm supposed to, when the devil comes and tempts me, I just fall back on all those things that I've been doing as a Christian. I fall back on the basics of reading my Bible. My prayer life strengthens. I rely more heavily on the Lord. You want to talk about fitness? If I have been lifting like I'm supposed to, if I've been doing cardio like I'm supposed to, if I've been stretching like I'm supposed to, if I'm in a situation where my body starts to want to quit because I'm hurting or I'm tired, I've been there before. I have prepared in the times of peace. When it gets hard, the times of war, my body's used to it. As a father, if I'm teaching my kids the way I'm supposed to, faith-based, staying close to God, I'm holding them to what I say. I'm staying consistent. And when it comes times to do the hard things as a dad, I can fall back on the way I've taught them. The same thing as a husband. If I'm loving my wife, if I'm praying for my wife, if all these things that I'm doing as a husband, if I'm supporting her, providing for her, protecting her, when it comes time to for tough times in your marriage, you fall back on those things. You continue to do those things. The fire service. If I'm training, if I'm masking up like I'm supposed to, if I'm readily doing my pre-plans as a company officer, if I'm seeing out being out in my district, if I'm working on my size ups, if I'm forcing doors, throwing ladders, and all that stuff, when it comes time for something that comes out in my first due. And it's a building that I know, and it's a ripper, and we're by ourselves for a couple minutes. All that time that we've prepared for in peace, now in the time of war, our behavior has been predicted by our preparation.
Yeah.
So when I heard that farmhand analogy, I can sleep through a storm. I pray that in the situations in my life, my faith and fitness, as a father, as a husband in the fire service, I pray that I can sleep through a storm, because I've prepared accordingly.
Right. Right. Solid advice.
So I try to find balance in the way that I stay consistent. Whenever I'm off, I try my best. I work a lot. I work a lot part-time. I have a family to support. I have a wife and three kids. I have a wife, beautiful little girl, and two little boys. It's my job to provide for them. It's my job to protect them. So, yeah, I work a lot, but when I'm home, I try my best to invest in them, spend time with them as much as I can. So when I'm away, they can rely on that, on the quality time that we spend together. As a Christian, if I'm off, I need to be in church. Even when I'm not in church, I need to have a strong prayer life. I need to be in the Bible. And that's another thing. Like, as a Christian, like, you fall back on the playbook. on the Bible. Like it says everything that you're supposed to do. There's no getting it twisted. So, if I'm questioning what I'm doing, I have to look and see what God has told me to do in the Bible as a Christian, as a husband, as a father, as a friend. And it starts with the two main ones, love God and love others. And so, and that extends into the fire service. I can be a great fireman, but if I treat people crappy, they're not going to want to work with me, or they're not going to want to approach me as a mentor, or they're not going to want to tell me about their problems, whether they're on my crew or not. I pray that, I'm a guy that would be approachable when people need someone to talk to, or when they have a question about something. And if I've shown them the brotherhood, if I've extended my not my but just my heart, basically, then they'll be more out apt to approach me and rely on me and confide in me. I just try to invest in people when I'm with them. When my family, my church, my friends, the brotherhood, the fire service, I have made such good friends. And I think it's because I just take advantage of the time that I have with people. Chris Clark and I, we when we were we were inseparable when we were on a crew together. We just had such a good time because whether we were, training like crazy, sweating our rear ends off, or whether we were, messing around, pranking each other in the bays, or having serious conversations, we were investing in each other. And the same thing with anybody. I just try to get the time that I have with people, I try to get the most out of it.
Okay. And so with that wellness, brotherhood, and looking after our own, that term brotherhood, it's spoken a lot, it's shown a lot in the fire service, but we as firefighters know there's always a side of the fire service that's not really brotherhood like. So how do we look after our own?
Well, I think starting out, you have to put aside stigmas. And I think there has been a great trend with that. Recently, big one is mental health. And some folks think, some folks would say that it's the job that affects their mental health. In my situation, the job has been the escape. And being away from my family, that's ultimately what I'm responsible for, is how good of a husband, how good of a parent I am. Because if I can't be a fireman tomorrow, if I cut both my legs off, I'm still gonna be a husband and a dad, right? So that's what I'm responsible for. So those are the things. Being away from them is what affects me in my mental health. So I have to care to that side. And so you have to talk to people. You have to talk about it. And the main thing with people is, facial expressions. You can pretty much tell in the first minute or so, being with somebody, meeting somebody, whether they're going to be approachable, or if you know them, whether something's wrong with them. Paying attention to people is huge. And then as soon as you see it, it's two words. You good? Hey man, you good? And their answer very likely will tell you how good they are. Like, yeah, okay. Well, if you answer like that, I know you're not good. Like, you good? Yeah. Why? So, and I think just making sure you are accountable to people, like just even if it's just a checkup. Hey man, you good? Hadn't talked to you in a while. That's another thing. I got guys that I haven't seen in, months and years, but if they cross my mind, I'll send them a text, or I'll pick up the phone and call them. Hey man, I just crossed my mind. How you doing? Or hey man, hey, I just thought about you. How's your wife? How's your kids? Or how's things going in your life? I
Right.
think just, we're all busy. We all have so many things going on in the fire service. We have our families. A lot of people have side businesses. So you're so busy, but everybody thinks about these people. And the problem is that we're just not being accountable and reaching out to them and asking them, how are you doing? And, I think when someone says, like, I'm not doing good, I think it's like, it can't be like, oh man, you'll be all right. It's a, hey, you need to tell me about this. You need to tell me about this right now. Like, what do you mean you're not good? And I've had people who've done that for me, and I've told them something I struggle with, and they're like, hey man, you should probably take care of that. And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, what you described is anxiety. And like, oh yeah? And they're like, yeah, you should talk to somebody. And I'm like, no, nah, I'm good. And they're like, trust me, you should talk to somebody. And then when I talk to somebody, I'm way better off for it. And I'm not shy to think or to say that, I haven't sought out, help therapy or anything like that. I have. Because it's my job as a Christian, husband, father, company officer, friend, brotherhood, brother, son, all these things to make sure I'm the best I can be for the people that depend on me. And that may mean like someone who looks at me as they might not be kin to me, they might just be someone who works with me or even on another crew, but they look up to me as someone who handles my business. And if I'm falling apart, they're like, man, this dude's falling apart. I used to look up to him. If I'm not taking care, if I'm losing my mind, if my mental status is not taken care of, then the rest of me is going to crumble too. And it all ties in, man. I can work out things. I can work out small issues with my brain in the gym and like that. I can get in there, get a good sweat on, get a good lift, get a good HIIT workout. And clear my mind. That's another thing people don't realize is like those are one and the same. Your mental health and your fitness, they are like give and take with each other. And if your mental health is crappy and you ain't been in the gym in a while, you should go in there and get a good session in, see how you feel. You probably feel a little bit better. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I think starting out, you just have to start caring for people and start paying attention to your people. And if they're not good, you ask them and you work through that with them. It's huge. You do whatever you can. If it's finding resources, if it's being on the phone with them for 3 hours, if it's, hey man, where are you at? I'm gonna come be with you right now. We've all had friends that have done that, and we haven't done the right thing, and we regret not doing what we should have done. And I don't want to be the type that regrets something in a terrible situation and have to carry that with me for the rest of my life. So I've made it a habit. When I think of somebody, I'll reach out to them. Hey man, how you doing? You just crossed my mind. Or if someone says, pray for me, you pray for them. You don't tell them I'm gonna pray for you. You pray for them. That's the biggest thing, is praying for people. Man, makes a huge difference.
Love the advice. Solid. The stigma, suck it up. Leave your feelings at the door. Very, very easy things to say, but it's not very practical for a lot of people. And
No.
with what we do, yeah, a lot of times it's not, well, I don't want to say a lot of times. Certain times it is going to be job related what we see because we see some terrible things, but on the flip side, we get to do some really awesome things for people.
Exactly.
But
Exactly.
it's not just the calls. The job has a lot of stress, manpower, administration, whatever the case may be. Like, fire service is what you make it. But in my experience, firefighters who tend to be more into the job sometimes let the outside noise affect them, where it also starts to affect their own families, and they start
Yeah.
bringing it home and stuff.
That's a slippery slope, man. And if we're into the job, we all want to be good at our jobs. Like this, that's a common factor. We all, those of us that are into the job, want to be jam up. And you have to learn how to turn it off.
Which
Every
is not
now and then,
easy.
it's not easy. It's not, because it's such a passion that we have for this job. And it's the best job in the world. We all agree. It's the best job in the world, man. I don't know what else I would do right now. And like, people are like, oh, you're a fireman. Yes, I'm a fireman, but that's not my personality. And that's been something that I hope that people don't get twisted. I hope that they would view me as a good person, as a Christian, as a great dad, as a great husband, and a fireman. Not like, hey, there's a fireman. I hope the people that know me would not put my personality or my whole persona as a fireman. I think that's something that is hard, like you say, it's hard to turn it off, and it's hard to make sure you twist it in the right direction. But we have got to make sure balance is the word you use, and that's the best way to look at it, is you balance. If I'm there, and I've talked to my guys, if I have to be away from my family for 24 hours at a time, then you bet I'm going to pour myself into this place, and I'm going to be fulfilled when I'm away from my family. I told my wife the same thing. If I'm going to be away from you guys for 24 hours, I am not going to sit behind a desk just because it's great pay or something like that. If I have to be away from you, even if it's 24 hours, I'm going to be fulfilled. Because if I'm fulfilled, whether I get 10 hours of sleep or 2 hours of sleep, I'm a better person for them whenever I come home because I'm fulfilled. And that balance is something that you have got to maintain. If not, it can slip away from you very easily. So yeah, you can be a fireman, but you don't have to be a fireman at home.
Right.
They don't need you to be a fireman. They need you to be a great husband and a leader and a great dad and a protector and a provider.
That's a fact. That's a fact. Well said. Well said. I always like to ask the guests before they before we part, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up? And you kind of mentioned it earlier, but I want to see if maybe it's changed a little.
I tell folks, I'm an operations guy. I can never see myself being a chief. And as good a chief as I have, and my battalion chief, he's a real aggressive guy, progressive guy, and a great at his job, and he was great operationally. I just could never see myself going there. I always enjoy doing the work and being with the guys on the truck. And if you're asking me where I think I would be before I would retire, I would hope I would say I would retire off of a truck company.
Okay.
As I want to be the guy that they're like, man, that dude has been a captain for 20 years and he is such a jam up captain. And I like being with the guys. Yeah,
Okay.
I want to be that guy.
Okay. And you want to be that guy that stays fit too.
Oh, there's no question. That's a non-negotiable for me. Because
Okay.
again, I could get fired tomorrow and I still have a wife and kids to take care of. So I've got to be the guy who's prepared to do whatever I need to do. If I'm not fit enough to protect them or take care of them, then there's what good am I? So yeah, I'm gonna stay fit. I'm gonna stay fit for the fire service, but mainly because of them.
Love it. Love it. Kyle, I really appreciate you coming on, man. I know this is way out of your comfort zone, but you knocked it out the park
I appreciate it. It's
100%.
been fun. It's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it. As a first time experience, I got no complaints, man.
And you also got to thank, I give a shout out to Chris Clark. Chris hit me up one day. I was on shift. He texted me. He said, "Hey man, I got a guy for you." And I was like, "All right, send what you got." And he sent me everything and put a little bio behind it. He was like, "I worked with him. He's an awesome dude." And I was like, "All right, no worries. I'll give him a call." I called you. We set it all up. You're still probably like, "What? Why
Yeah.
me?"
It
But
was
I
funny because I saw you post one of your other ones, and I'm like, this guy had 40 years experience in the fire service, and I got to follow this. I'm like, oh man. But if Chris Clark trusts in me, then I'll try to rise to the occasion. He's, like I said, great dude, great mentor, one of the best firemen I've ever worked with, and just one of my best friends. So yeah, I'll have to give him a big hug when I see him and tell him thanks.
Awesome. Well, I gotta tell him, I'll tell him thank you too as well. It's been an awesome experience. I love your mindset. I could tell you love the fire service. Once a volunteer, always a volunteer. I started out as a volunteer. I'm no longer a volunteer anymore. Times have changed.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to do a little sacrificing, but I will never forget what being a volunteer got me to where I am today. Like, I never forget my roots. I never downplay volunteers. The
No.
most of the nation is made up of volunteers,
Yeah.
and without me starting out as one, turning into a career fireman, like everything I have is owed to that.
Yeah. I mean, and if those people, and I still know chiefs that have been doing it for the Robert Sweat is the chief at Lions Creek. I think he's been doing it as the chief longer than I've been alive, and still will get up from dinner, will get up from whatever he's doing and run a medical call or run a call. And I don't know many people who are like that at all in the fire service. He's still a true volunteer and a great chief who just generally wants to help others. And those are the kind, I hope that people say that about me at the end of my career, that like this guy just wanted to help people and he was generally like just a great person. So yeah, you're right. Like you can't discount or forget what these folks are doing. I mean, do I run as many volunteer calls as I used to? No. And but whenever I can go, I will go. But you cannot, you don't ever downplay those folks. They are giving, the most important thing you can give somebody is your time, and they're giving their time. And that's something you can't get back.
That's right. 100%. 100%. Kyle, really appreciate it, man. Like I said, really thoroughly enjoyed this. Knocked it
Yeah,
out the
me too,
park, man.
man.
I loved
I
it.
really appreciate the opportunity, Danny. I've enjoyed it.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.